find hope, get help, and discover peace. I'm Larry Woods, your host. Glad to have you with us today to be a part of Peace Talk. You know, the statistics tell us that 20% of Americans know somebody or have had an episode of mental illness at some point in their life. They've had contact with it. And a fairly large number of Americans are severely mentally ill. And yet we sit in our churches and we don't realize that those people might be sitting right beside us and we don't even know it. And we rarely ever talk about it. And it's just kind of hidden from us, though it's prevalent in our society. And it's something that maybe the church has overlooked. Well, that's what we want to talk about today, because we have as our guest Amy Simpson. Amy first appeared on Peace Talk back in October of 2011. And there she told her story, a little bit about her contact with mental illness and the beginning of her research on mental illness in the church. Well, she's finished that research and she's released a book called Troubled Minds, Mental Illness and the Church's Mission. So we're going to talk about that today. The church and mental illness. Amy, glad to have you back with us on Peace Talk.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here, Larry.
Tell us a little bit about yourself first. Again, reacquaint our audience with who Amy is. What do you do? I know you're with Christianity Today, but tell our audience what it is you actually do.
Yes, I work as an editor for Christianity Today. I don't work on the flagship magazine. I work on some of our other resources, specifically targeting women. So I serve as one of the editors on the Today's Christian Woman editorial staff, focusing especially on marriage and parenting issues. And then I serve as the editor for giftedforleadership.com, which is our website specifically geared for women in church leadership and helping to support and encourage women with the gift of leadership.
And these are publications that are all available to anybody in our audience, huh? If they just get with, how would they get in touch with you to find out how to perhaps subscribe or tap into the website and take advantage of a lot of the work that you do?
Well, giftedforleadership.com is a totally free resource, so anyone can go to that URL, giftedforleadership.com, and look at what we offer there for women who are leading in the church. And todayschristianwoman.com is a subscription-based site, but there's plenty of free content there as well, so people can feel free to go to that website, todayschristianwoman.com, and find what we have there. And then if they like what they see, they can subscribe to the website, get more of what we offer, and get our actual publications that come out a few times a year.
Good. Well, I'm glad you had a chance. We've given you a chance to tell our ladies in the audience, or our husbands, hey, Mother's Day's coming up sometime soon. So, and I just realized that, you know, this program's not going to air. In fact, it's going to air after Mother's Day. So, guys, if you didn't do anything for Mother's Day, maybe you can redeem yourself right now. Go take care of this. But, Amy, let's get into the subject now. First, let's start with your own story. What was your experience with mental illness and the church?
Yes, my mother actually has been diagnosed with schizophrenia, so my experience with mental illness is primarily in walking through life with her. She exhibited symptoms of schizophrenia from before I was ever actually around, but her symptoms became much more pronounced and severe when I was a young teenager. And since then, she's gone through a very serious struggle with schizophrenia and with a cycle of symptoms that, you know, has repeated itself over the last few decades. So my family, my whole family has been affected by that profoundly and walked through that with her. And at that whole time, all along, we've been very involved in the church. My dad was a pastor for 10 years when I was growing up. My family has been, all of us are involved, deeply involved in our churches as active lay people. And so our experience in the church is deep. Our experience with mental illness is pretty significant with a serious illness like schizophrenia. And so I have seen firsthand from my own experience how many churches respond to the issue of mental illness, which is something that's obviously very close to my heart and my personal experience.
Let's talk a little bit about your experience, because as I read your book, it was kind of mixed as regards to church, wasn't it? I mean, in many cases, the church was almost oblivious to what your family was going through. And yet, of course, you were involved in the church, and so it still was a refuge to you.
Right, exactly. I would say mixed is a good word. Most people in the church when I was growing up and living at home, I think were probably unaware of exactly what was happening with our family, and I can't fault them for that. In fact, my family was complicit in that unawareness because we mostly stayed silent about our experience. But some of the people in the church and some of the church leaders were aware and I think did their best to help as the best they knew how, but really weren't sure what to do to help. So I think our church was full of well-intentioned people who either didn't understand what was happening or really didn't know how to help. So we've had some hurt there, but it's mostly been because of the church's silence on the issue, not because people in the church have said, you know, incredibly hurtful things to us. And that's, I think, maybe the primary problem or the place to start in addressing the problem of how churches tend to handle mental illness is that silence. And the suggestion that people who are themselves suffering should stay silent about their issues as well. So that was the message we got. We mostly stayed quiet. In the meantime, though, in the years since, I will say that there are people within the church who have had a powerful ministry, primarily to my parents, and I'm very grateful for them. It's been mostly lay people who have a better understanding of mental illness because they're mental health professionals or because of something they've been through, and they've reached out to my parents in some very simple ways, which has made a really big difference. So I do feel the church could have done a better job in ministering to my family, especially if they had had a better understanding of how to help. But I also am grateful for the people who have reached out and had a ministry to my family, especially to my parents in recent years.
Would you say that the church's awareness of mental illness within the church is probably because society is more aware of mental illness? It's one of the things that to some degree is coming out of the closet, you might say, in terms of our society?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think our society in general is becoming more aware of mental illness and more educated about just what it is. More people are getting the courage to speak openly about their experiences, which I think helps all facets of our society, including the church. The problem of mental illness, the size of the problem, I think is still widely misunderstood, but there's a growing understanding of that as well. Most people just have no idea, and I didn't know until fairly recently when I started to research the issue, that in the United States, more than 25% of adults in any given year will suffer from a diagnosable mental illness. There's a lot of variety within the definition of mental illness. There's the serious and chronic mental illness, like you mentioned, like schizophrenia, like bipolar disorder, and some other disorders. And then there are the problems that are not quite as serious or that even tend to be short-term issues. So there's a spectrum there. But you put it all together, and it's more than 25% of the population, and most people just aren't aware that it's that common, I think because of that silence, because we don't talk much about it. And it's happening at the margins of our society, which is not the case. It can strike anyone.
Before we actually get in and talk about the church itself, explain your research, how you went about gathering the information of which we're going to talk about, and then you then included into your book.
Yes. I conducted a survey through some of our Christianity Today-owned publications. Leadership Journal was one of those publications and really the primary place where I did the research. But I included some other publications as well that are geared for church leaders. So I basically sent out an invitation through those publications inviting people to respond to a survey and tell us about their experiences with mental illness in ministry. And we got a lot of responses. Actually, I stopped collecting responses when we hit 500. So we had a nice sample size to work with, and we're able to extrapolate some data from that about how churches were currently responding to mental illness and some of what they themselves had experienced, not only in ministry, but but church leaders themselves in their own experiences with mental illness.
So the research that you did, I think we'd say, was within what we would call the evangelical church, right? The constituency of Christianity Today, Leadership Journal, those type publications.
Yes. Now, we sent out the invitation to our audiences in general. We did not, I didn't check to see that we had, you know, a representative sample of churches, you know, that would represent all denominations. It's probably skewed evangelical, although we certainly have other groups of Christians who are represented in our audiences as well.
Okay, well, let's then talk about it. What did you find out? First of all, give us the 35,000-foot view of how the church is doing in its dealing with mental illness.
Yes, well, among those 500 respondents, 98% of them said they had seen some type of mental illness in their congregation. So church leaders definitely are aware of mental illness, but at the same time, 16% of those church leaders said they felt, quote, not equipped at all to minister to people with mental illness. There's some sense that they aren't sure what to do or how to respond to it. 80% of the people who responded to my survey said they believe mental illness is a real, treatable, and manageable illness. But only 12.5% of them said that mental illness is openly discussed in a healthy way in their church. So there's some gap between awareness of mental illness within the churches and response to mental illness in the churches. And again, besides this survey, I also conducted some personal interviews with people about their experiences, not only church leaders, but also people who've suffered from mental illness and family members who've been caring for someone with mental illness. And just from those interviews also, I would say there's that gap exists in people's experiences as well. There's a widespread silence and some confusion over mental illness and how to respond to it within the church.
Okay, Amy, my engineer says we're up to the time. We have to take a break, but we're going to come back and we'll talk about in more detail than your findings, how it affects the mentally ill person, and then how it affects the church, and what's the value of a ministry of a church to those with mental illness. So stay with us. We'll be back in 2 minutes. We'll continue our conversation with Amy Simpson, the author of the book Troubled Minds, Mental Illness and the Church's Mission. This is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace.
Every day on the Janet Mefford Show, we take a look at the news of the day, both in the church and in the world, from a distinctly Christ-centered perspective. We talk to the day's biggest newsmakers about the stories and issues you care about and examine everything in light of the Word of God. Best of all, we get perspective on the issues when we hear from the most important person of all, you. So tune in and get ready for a biblical perspective on everything going on in your world. Tune in to the very next Janet Mefford Show.
Weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM.
May is American Stroke Month. Stroke is the nation's third leading cause of death and a leading cause of adult disability. Yet with new therapies, many strokes can be effectively treated when detected early. Symptoms occur suddenly and may include numbness or weakness in the face, arm, or leg, especially on one side of the body. Other warning signs are intense headache, dizziness, loss of balance or coordination, trouble speaking, and sudden vision changes in one or both eyes. Treatment is usually most effective within 3 hours of symptom onset. Interventional neuroradiologists are performing new treatments that can result in complete or near-complete recovery from the effects of stroke. Risk for stroke increases as people age, but some lifestyle changes can decrease that risk. Remember, stroke is treatable when recognized quickly. Know the symptoms and seek emergency medical help immediately when you see the signs. For information on stroke risks, symptoms, diagnosis, and treatment, visit radiologyinfo.org. That's radiologyinfo.org. This health reminder is from the Radiological Society of North America.
Before we rejoin today's program, let me say thank you for listening to Peace Talk. Each program comes with the prayer that you will find the peace that Jesus desires for you to enjoy today. But I'd like to take a minute to tell you about the website, peacetalk.com. Go to peacetalk.com and you'll discover that Peace Talk is more than teaching and great stories. We offer opportunities for bringing Peace Talk to you and your church. If you're caught in relationship-destroying conflict, At peacetalk.com, you can access relationship restoring services. You will also find seminar retreat opportunities for your group. And at peacetalk.com, you can read the blog and sign up for our free email newsletter, Peace Mail. Follow us on Peace Talk and Twitter. And please, don't overlook the donate button, because Peace Talk needs your help. Peace Talk is all about you finding peace. Let's rejoin our program, and remember, Peace Talk is your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. This is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. I'm Larry Woods, your host. Glad to have you with us. If you stayed with us through the break, glad to have you return with us. If you're new, glad to have you join us. Our guest today is Amy Simpson, the author of the book Troubled Minds, Mental Illness and the Church's Mission. Amy is an editor with Christianity Today, with that family of publications. She works with them. She works particularly in their women's publications, and she's done extensive research on the question of mental illness and how churches are dealing with it, and she's sharing that with us today. Part of it also her own experience of growing up in a home where mental illness was a very real thing, and growing up in a church where the mental illness issue of her family was not addressed by the church, and that impact on her. So, Amy, glad to have you on Peace Talk. Let's get right back into our interview and tell us, in your research, what is the effect of a church when they don't talk about mental illness, when they don't try to minister to the mentally ill? What is the effect of that on the mentally ill person and their family?
Well, a couple of things. One is we need to remember that we represent Christ to each other. So when we stay silent on an issue, or we're aware of a problem and we don't reach out to people affected by that problem, it's easy for people who are in a vulnerable place, who are maybe experiencing a spiritual crisis, to interpret that as God's rejection of them. So I think we need to take very seriously that representative role and how it can affect other people when we treat them that way. Also, we tend to offer very practical help to people who are affected by other illnesses, like when someone is hospitalized for, you know, a surgery, or someone breaks a leg or is going through cancer treatment. You know, we bring meals, we make sure that they have rides, they are able to get where they need to go, their children are cared for. Churches often don't provide that same kind of practical help to people who are affected by mental illness, so we reinforce the idea that mental illness is different from other types of illness or other types of suffering, and for some reason it doesn't deserve our help and our support. We also, I think the third thing, and maybe in some ways the most devastating, is that when we ignore the issue of mental illness, despite its prevalence, despite the fact that it affects more people per year than diabetes, heart disease, cancer, AIDS, and HIV all put together, we reinforce the idea that our faith is not big enough to address it, that somehow theologically we just don't have the right answer for that kind of suffering. And we do have the right answer for that kind of suffering. It's not inconsistent at all with Christian theology to say people's brains can be affected by the imperfection in this world. And we also have hope that we can offer. But when we fail to speak up and offer that kind of hope, we do send the message that somehow this is a problem that is too big for our Christian faith, or perhaps even too big for God.
You mentioned in your book, and I think we all are aware of this to some degree, that there has always been, and still to some degree, a bit of a stigma attached to mental illness. That just gets reinforced, doesn't it, when the church doesn't talk about, doesn't deal with, doesn't mention, and doesn't provide any kind of assistance to a mentally ill person or their family?
Absolutely, and the silence itself is self-reinforcing. So when we stay quiet, we send the message that everyone should stay quiet, and then that silence itself continues to send the message that people should stay quiet and should feel ashamed of their illness. That stigma is a huge problem related to mental illness. The U.S. Surgeon General called it the biggest barrier to treatment for people who are affected by mental illness. It's just difficult for people to overcome the fear and shame associated with the idea of getting treatment.
Since you surveyed 500 churches, and there's always controversy about the nature of mental illness, did you find some churches that just simply reject the idea that it's a disease and it's a physical problem like another disease and want to call it just a matter of sin or even demon oppression or something?
Yes, there are some churches who assume that all mental illness is caused by something like demon possession or a spiritual weakness, maybe an ongoing entrenched sin in the person's life. I did find that some people or some churches held that view. Like I said earlier, 80% of people who responded to my survey said mental illness is a real and treatable, manageable illness. And people were allowed to mark more than one response. But almost 20% of people indicated that they felt a mental illness was indicative of demon possession or demonic influence. Another almost 30%, 29.4%, said mental illness is a behavioral problem caused by a person's bad choices. 30% said mental illness is a reflection of a spiritual problem that must be treated spiritually. So, yeah, there are some misconceptions about what mental illness is within the church, and that those misconceptions feed the lack of healthy and appropriate response. Now, I would not say that spiritual issues are not at work in the lives of people affected by mental illness. We all have spiritual issues. We all have spiritual shortcomings. And at its heart, all disease, all sickness is caused by sin, because we live in a world that has been poisoned by our rebellion against God, and that, in essence, is responsible for the suffering we endure. But mental illness is no more caused by sin than other types of illness. It's not legitimate for us to say, to point the finger at someone with schizophrenia and say, if you weren't so sinful, you wouldn't have this problem. Because essentially, with that kind of logic, we should all be schizophrenic. we're all equally sinful before God, and it's pretty clear from Scripture that God does not inflict these diseases on us because He wants to punish some of us more than others. These are consequences of living in a world where, again, we are all in rebellion against God and need His grace through Jesus.
I would think that what might be one of the greater proofs about the nature of mental illness is that simply since we're all heir to this, when some experience mental illness, to suggest that their sins must be greater or worse or more vexing than others, and therefore they have a deeper sin problem, just doesn't match what the Scripture teaches us about all of us from that standpoint.
Right.
Well, in your research, what did you find would be, since we don't have a lot of time, what would be the best approach and maybe the simplest approach for a church to begin to concern itself with the issues of its mentally ill members and their families?
Right, great question. Within the pages of Troubled Minds, I actually do profile a few churches who have programs designed specifically to meet the needs of people with mental illness. And there's some variety in there in terms of what they offer, and I've found a few churches who offer much deeper support for people affected by mental illness. But any church can start, can find a good starting place, and churches don't have to feel overwhelmed by this, thinking that, we need to do anything and everything. It really starts, I would love to see more churches just start with providing that kind of practical support that I mentioned earlier, the same kind of support that we offer to people who are affected by other illness and injury. Thinking when someone has a case of mental illness, not thinking, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do, I don't know how to help, I'm just not going to do anything, or I'm going to keep it quiet because I don't want to violate this person's sense of privacy. Of course, we should respect people's privacy, but that doesn't mean we can't visit them in the hospital. It doesn't mean we can't visit them in their homes. it doesn't mean we can't ask them, what do you need? What can I help you with? Can I bring you some food? Can, you know, do your children need a ride anywhere? Do you need a ride to a doctor's appointment? Many people who are on medications, especially if they're in that period of adjustment to a medication, can't drive. They need rides. Many people who are hospitalized for mental health issues or on medication, again, may have financial difficulties in paying for those treatments. So, you know, we can support them financially. So some of that very practical help that we already know how to do for other people who are going through hard times, we can also offer to people going through mental illness. We don't have to be afraid to ask, how can I help you? Or be afraid to acknowledge, hey, this person is having a hard time, and just reach out to them. Sometimes our initial reactions to mental illness are based in fear because of that stigma. You know, we're all affected by it. So we need to stop and think about where is this fear coming from, and is it legitimate? If it's legitimate fear because you feel the person is a danger to themselves or to someone else, then call the police. If it's not a legitimate fear, then surrender that fear. Ask for God's help in seeing that person as a fellow human being who has the same needs and desires you have, and then go ahead and reach out to them as a friend like you would to anyone else.
We're down to the last minute or so of the program, Amy. I noticed one of the anecdotal comments that was made is, even though churches may have even programs to do this, many of the mentally ill people and their families said it was always somebody in the church who took an interest in them that seemed to make the most help. So what you're saying is you don't have to be a trained professional necessarily to help the person and the families. Perhaps it's just like you said, the loving concern for what's going on in their lives is really helpful.
Absolutely. And just being accepting and showing, just because I just found out you've diagnosed with depression or you were hospitalized for a mental health issue, doesn't mean I'm going to stop being your friend. Because that's what people, for the most part, expect. They expect others to walk away from them when they have an issue like that, because that's what they experience in society as a whole. And we in the church can be different in extending friendship. And you're right, it doesn't take any professional qualification to be a friend.
What I've noticed in our conversations on mental illness is that when it happens, most people fall into despair and questioning, why me? But the whole point is, the church is the author of hope because it knows the God of hope. And so we really do have the answer, even to the questions of mental illness. Amy, thank you for your research. Thank you for sharing it with us here on Peace Talk. Again, I hope you've listened carefully. There are things you can do, everybody, each one of us, to help the mentally ill that are in our churches. So thank you, Amy. Thank you for being a part of Peace Talk today, because this has been Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.